Episode of We the People Radio. We have a bunch of people in here today, so it's going to sound like we have a bunch of people in here.
Today.
My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cunniff, and our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. They're located at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in Shasta Lake City, and they can fix you up with anything John Deere. Mowers, tractors, implements, you name it, they got it. Go in and see them. They got pretty good stock of steel right now. If you're looking for lawn equipment, they've got it in stock. Or you can give them a call. Their phone number is 226-9226. Or catch them on the web at papemachinery.com. There you go.
So today is September the 18th, in case we air this at a future time. So September 18th, if you go to the show page for that, I've posted the Los Angeles Times article that I'm sure we will reference. And I'm kind of hoping they'll forgive me that I posted it as a PDF so you could read it. But I did post the front page of the Sunday Los Angeles Times last week while we were talking about medical serial killers and stuff. The Los Angeles Times was busy plastering their front page with a gigantic picture of Mount Shasta and all the zillions of dope greenhouses in front of it. Promises Up in Smoke was the name of the article. And then California has done little to address the explosion of illegal cannabis farms. So, I mean, you can't go wrong with that. Kind of good exposure.
Everybody's kind of catching on now. I mean, it was on.
People are starting to figure it out.
National news had it on last week as well. So it's starting to get a little bit of traction.
Exactly. And so we have Kathy and Officer Joe with us today. So you guys can tell us however much you want to tell us about you or nothing at all. And you have lots of paper over there that I haven't. I don't know.
Well, the LA.
You guys start wherever you'd like.
Well, what I love about the article that came out in the LA Times, right? I have friends in Texas that were actually even posting it. So, I mean, it has blown up and across the world. And this is something that share.
Yeah, for all the people who think that if you legalize it, it'll make all the crime go away and everything's going to be magical.
Yeah,
it's not.
Yeah, and we're already seeing that in like states like Kentucky and all of them. So they
Oklahoma.
They're already having issues. And I'm like, duh.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Because we have a lot of federal senators that are thinking legalizing, you know, taking it off as a Schedule I drug. That's not going to help either.
Well, God, no. I mean, if you're going to take marijuana off or pot or whatever the hell you want to call it, if you want to take that off of a Schedule I drug, then what's next?
Yeah, you exactly. Know? Well, we go like Oregon. Everything's legal.
Yeah, I know.
We're Amsterdam.
Yeah, how's that working out?
Yeah.
So, Aaron, I'm going to jump in, and I'm going to, this is Officer Joe, I'm going to give the state of marijuana in Shasta County because we just flew the county last week. We're going to tell you all about Jones Valley, Round Mountain, Small Farm Track, and Two Feathers. We're going to talk about how dangerous it is for our hunters out there. Speaking about heavy equipment, we're going to talk about how heavy equipment is being utilized by our Sheriff's Department to take out the grows. We're going to talk about our Native Americans and them getting into the pot business here. We're going to talk a lot about political donations and the race for the Board of Supervisors, and that's Aaron Reznor and Kevin Cry, and how they are both deep into the marijuana money. So we're going to talk about that. And then we're going to talk about the problems that dispensaries bring to our communities. So one at a time, we'll address those.
Yeah, because, you know, the big thing is, well, the dispensaries, it's a legal business. How many times have you heard that?
Oh, yeah.
Do you even have enough fingers and toes for that? Because I actually don't.
Well, and when we talk about a legal business, we also have to say, who's policing these legal businesses? Where are they getting their pot from? Are they getting them from the illegal grows that promote human trafficking? Ms. Reznor, are we, you know, who's doing that? So why would you invite a legal business into your community if there are no checks and balances?
Right.
I'm holding a national study in front of me. It's a vetted study from the Public Health and Safety Institute, and an additional one dispensary per square mile in a zip code was cross-sectionally associated with a 6.8% increase in the number of marijuana hospitalizations.
Wait, do that one again?
I'll let you read it.
No, but just, yeah.
All right, so the study was about marijuana dispensaries in a community.
Yeah, yeah.
So every time you put in a dispensary in that area zip code, every square mile, you have an additional 6.8% increase in the number of marijuana hospitalizations.
Lovely.
Yep.
Wow.
What could go wrong? And I know I've talked about this before, but we had just here in the Reading area an emergency room nurse who got a hold of me and sent me pictures of, like, it looked like candy, totally looked like candy, gummy bears and that kind of thing. It was shaped like the little gummy bears, you know, and a four-year-old and a six-year-old. Ate a whole bunch of them when their folks were asleep or whoever was asleep, and I wonder why they were asleep. They had probably eaten some, too. And the kids got up, ate them all, and overdosed and had to go to the hospital.
Yeah.
So this doesn't just affect, you know, this whole argument that, well, it's personal choice, it's for adults, you know, and that whole thing.
Well, the common byproducts of dispensaries, Aaron, are increased drug dealing, sales to minor, loitering, heavy vehicle and foot traffic in retail areas. You've got increased noise, robberies of customers near the facilities, and loss of commercial businesses that don't want to be located in the vicinity of marijuana dispensaries. Now, the dispensary itself might be safe because they have cameras and lighting and security people on scene, but as soon as you step outside that envelope, forget it.
Yeah,
I invite anybody to go up onto Twin View, sit in front of that dispensary, and watch the vehicles go in and out of there for an hour, and tell me that you don't have drivers under the influence coming to that location and leaving that location. And we know, as drug prevention folks, prior to COVID, when we were testing all the offenders coming through, that 50% before pre-COVID were saying that they had they had used both marijuana and alcohol as a part of their DUI. So those people are out there in the community among us. They are using these products, and they are driving among us, and they are killing us.
And you have to wonder, like, why don't we see more data like this? Why don't we see more hard data showing how many drivers are under the influence of alcohol or marijuana? It's because when an officer pulls someone over for, you know, whatever it is, you know, running a red light or whatever, alcohol is always going to be the first thing because
it's easy to test, easy to see, easy to smell.
Whereas marijuana, the testing is so expensive that they'll just forego that because the prosecuting DUI drivers for marijuana is a lot harder than prosecuting someone for alcohol. And we need to get on board. We need to like, no, this is not right. What is your family? What are your kids' lives worth to you to start seeing that data? Because the community doesn't want to see that data.
Well, and for the people out there that are going, well, I always channel the contraries. So I hear them saying, if this doesn't affect me, I don't use it, I don't know anyone in my family who uses it. And I'm thinking, yeah, but do you have any ancestors? Are you planning on having any ancestors? Because the heightened use of cannabis and regular use of cannabis has chromosomal changes in its back pocket for your four generations of your family. I would point people toward the our website at wethepeopleradio.us. If you go to the top, right next to the archives, it says pot. And in that listing of shows we have done on this topic, you will see Dr. Stuart Reese. And he goes into all the science and the detail. And honestly, if you don't feel like it's sufficient and you'd like to hear more on that particular topic, please email us. Our emails and phone numbers are right on the site. Tell me you're not convinced. You want more on that because happy to find it. It's right there. Right.
And we're seeing, to back that up, we're seeing now schizophrenia and mental health problems.
Oh, yeah,
right now. Later in life, though, for people who even stop using cannabis, and they've used cannabis heavily, and then they decide they want to try to become sober, and then at some point later in their life, they have a reemergence into what we call the damage from cannabis. So they're more prone. It's like getting sunburned. Once you're sunburned once,
you damage your cells.
You're predisposed to it. So
what does it take 17 years to make a wrinkle?
Right. So later in life,
like
they're appearing in their 50s, now 50s and 60s. They're starting to appear with issues from marijuana use that they've had before in their life.
What could possibly go wrong societally?
And you hear this argument all the time. Well, it's God's plant. There is nothing.
I've never heard that argument. That's a ridiculous argument.
Yeah. There is nothing natural about this plant. It has been so genetically modified that we're comparing beer and moonshine now. And beer is gone. It's garbage.
Adam wasn't brewing moonshine.
Yeah. And so now we're into that heavy, heavy THC level of drug.
Well, and, you know, from previous shows too, hemp, you know, they plan in the future to take hemp. They're probably doing it now, actually.
Yep.
Mix it with toluene, which would be an ingredient in nail polish, paint thinner, stuff you don't leave by your water heater. And that combination gives you a delta-9 cannabinoid, which is like anywhere between 90 and 100%.
Right.
That's what they're vaping.
Right.
So you don't even know they're using it. It isn't like, you know, you've got the potheads that might live, say, near some of us. Who would be, you know, stinking up your house with it? This is stuff that's really, really like under the radar.
Well,
usage.
Yeah, and I mean, just in a recent conversation with some higher up school administrators, yes, we now have vape detectors in bathrooms, and you know why? It's so that.
They vape detectors in bathrooms?
Yeah, in the bathrooms, because so many kids were going into the bathrooms to vape that maybe a student that doesn't vape couldn't use the bathroom because it was so bad. So we have vape detectors in there. They're not perfect. They don't catch everybody. But at least now other kids can use the bathroom. But even the school officials know these kids aren't just vaping nicotine.
They're
vaping marijuana.
Sure.
Yep. The high potency THC.
Yeah.
I wonder why we have school shootings and all the rest of it.
Exactly.
So for people who might be new to this, you know, kind of the science of it, and are thinking, well, you know, what's the difference between that and alcohol and prescription medication and stuff like that? Kathy just fell off her chair. Since we're on radio, we have to tell you what's going on. Kathy's on the floor. Joe's blowing off his finger gun there. but it's important because this is a fat-soluble molecule.
Right.
You know, promise we won't bury you in science today, but it's really important to know. It's a fat-soluble molecule, which makes it harder to test. It isn't like alcohol, which goes through your bloodstream and processes out. And the largest concentration of fat in your body is in your brain. So that's where it's stored long-term, in your brain.
Kathy and I, Aaron, get a lot of the NIMBY. Not in my backyard. I don't see it. It doesn't affect me. Let me tell you how it's going to affect you. So we have national studies now that show employees who test positive for marijuana have a 55% more industrial accidents and 85% more injuries than non-users, and 78% have higher absentee rates than users. And these drug marijuana using employees have been shown to have a 300% higher medical costs, which increases, obviously, costs for employers and employees.
Wow. So I'm thinking that all this extra tax revenue we're going to get from these co-ops probably isn't going to cover all those types of things at all, not even come close.
And we just had that conversation with the city, and the city has now values your child's life and marijuana use at $1.5 million, because that's what the city is making on marijuana. And that's
$1.5 million.
But that's pre cost. Now, when you start taking out all the costs for an employee,
administration. Additional law enforcement, health costs,
And they're supposed to also give that money to prevention, and we see absolutely
because you guys are in the prevention business.
Well, and guess what? We don't want it.
Yeah,
Why would you take marijuana money
to educate on marijuana?
Like, why would we take alcohol money for sober grad? Hello.
Yes, why indeed? And, you know, things like that used to actually make sense. That was considered something we could figure out on our own, but...
And before you go to break, I want to tell you that we're
going
to come back.
We're not going anywhere. Yeah.
Okay, good.
I don't even have the song picked out.
Okay, good, because we're going to talk about the candidates that are up for Board of Supervisors that are taking marijuana money and justifying it to the rest of us. And these are people that work with our children, and these are people that run the city of Redding currently.
That don't like to see human trafficking, that are against homelessness, that are educating our children. hollow.
That say we should go after the illegal grows when, in fact, we know the illegal grows feed the legal, quote-unquote, legal market of the dispensaries. Over 80% of them now in California are fed by the illegal market. Oh, yeah, it's incredible. And that statistic.
See, and they'll tell you right away that, dispensaries are all organic.
Check.
Yeah.
This all comes from legal sources that have been.
Yeah.
They're all organic. I love the all organic part.
What?
You're like, okay, is there a bigger lie than it's all organic? No, pretty much no.
And a recent study of 1,000 California NorCal dispensaries showed that over 80% of those dispensaries had products that were tainted with all kinds of molds, bacteria, and pesticides that are just really good for the human body.
Yeah.
Well, the environmental degradation, we
haven't even touched on that.
No. But the thing is, for people who don't, they're looking at this as a, let's see, and they get convinced, right? It's pretty easy because what happens, sometimes law enforcement, local law enforcement in a county or a town says, look, we're super understaffed. We're not competitive. We need the money. We're going to need to permit legal growing.
Just like they're talking about in Lassen County.
Correct. That's kind of who I was channeling.
Yeah.
Okay. But I mean, there's people all over the country who listen to this. And so it's happening, in other places.
Yeah. Yeah.
So when they start talking about how we need the money, so that we can enforce, let's come back and talk about that. It'll give us 2 minutes to hate internally, and then we'll exercise those demons, and then we'll be ready for an audience when the commercial break is over.
And I'll get off the floor.
Yeah, we've already we pulled Kathy back on her stool.
I'll reload.
reload the finger gun. You're listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. Nice job, Bill.
I just got a new promotion, but I got high. Now I'm selling dope, and I know why.
Why?
Because I got high. Because I got high. Because I got high. La da 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 da. I was gonna go to court before I got high. I was gonna pay my child support.
Another song Ian didn't know, or Liam didn't know. He's like, where do you get this stuff?
That's a classic.
That's the classic.
I'm crying right now. Like, genuinely crying.
I love it when we find something in the Wayback Machine that you don't know. But honestly, that's kind of the look of it. Laugh about it because we didn't get high this morning. We drank coffee and came to the radio station.
But let me tell you where you will not laugh about it. Go down on Bocelli, across from the Veterans Home. This is where
Hartnell.
On Hartnell.
Oh, across from the old clinic.
Old clinic. Yep. And look at what Aaron Reznor and Mr. Mazzone bring to the city of Reading. Look at all the homeless, drug-addicted people.
As a matter of fact, I drove by and I was like, what the heck?
Yep.
Well, they were driven out of their homes in the Henderson open space. Where do you think they're going to go?
So they packed up all their crap and now they're hiding on the corner, kind of right there.
Right. Like and right behind the federal building, right there in the corner.
Between the federal courthouse. I thought that was kind of funny, too.
And even when their own, their own planning commission said, hey, please don't 5-0, please don't put that honey oil dispensary right next to the Good News Rescue Mission.
Yeah.
While we're trying to get all of our people sober.
Yeah.
They overruled them and put it there, right?
Yeah.
Can you, any more sick thing you can think of?
So there's a
cultivator. There's
is it in that?
Used to be the medical supply building.
Okay, so for
right
people
there.
who don't speak
dope language.
Yeah, dope lingo.
Dope.
Well, you should listen to our show more often, just for starters. Probably should hit the archives and get up to speed. But, okay, a honey oil production facility, what does that exactly mean?
That takes either cannabis or now they can take shake and hemp.
So it's all the stuff they're not going to smoke or whatever, just the crap that's left over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they can make it into oil. And that oil can be almost, well...
And it's made with butane.
One of the things they can make it...
Yeah, another terrifically organic chemical right there.
And they claim now to be able to make 100% quote-unquote pure THC out of that. Oh, yum. I want to put that in my body.
Besides the fact it's insanely flammable, and there was a period of time there where you had houses blowing up in neighborhoods because they were making honey oil. They take a PVC pipe, push all the cannabis crap down in the tube, and then dump butane in it.
Right.
And the stuff that drips out the bottom is kind of a yellow gook, and that's the quote honey oil.
Yeah, because it looks like honey.
We had the sheriff's department bust a nice lab down there in Anderson, and I've got pictures of it, a garage lab, and that's where this honey oil is coming from. So if you think you're getting some pharmaceutically controlled oil that's coming to you, you're getting third world backyard chemical dynamics. And on the other side of the wall of that garage was the children's bedroom.
Oh, of course.
So they were all removed and put into protective custody. Yeah.
Their
lives are ruined too.
Well, you know, and so then, of course, I'm hearing the people who say, well, you know, if we made this legal, there would be more restrictions and this would be less black market and all that.
Aaron, 20 years we've been trying this. 20 years, right?
No. I totally get that. But the part that I think folks, you know, fundamentally misunderstand, the biggest fundamental misunderstanding is that all these people are doing a lot of these. The black market exists because they just can't figure out how to do it legally. Yep, but that's not
actually... They don't want to do
that's
it.
That's not actually true.
Yeah, they don't want to do it.
They're not waiting to get a legal business license. They're never getting a legal business license. But now is the gold rush, and they're all making a fortune.
They don't want FDA approval.
No,
Trust me. They don't want to go through that process because it can never pass. It will never pass.
Well, and they won't make any more. They won't make money at that point either.
No.
Because now we're going to tax it and we're going to regulate it.
Well, children are legal, and they traffic them and sell them. So, you know, guns are actually legal, and they... traffic them and sell them. You know, I mean, so there's an illegal business for pretty much every legal, you know, side of things. But this isn't an industry that is being driven to the dark side because there's no opportunity for them. The problem is the legal businesses don't make any money unless they buy the...
From the illegal market.
From the black market. And that's how they make their
money. No way.
And since it's all cash, and now we're going to have the casino getting in on the marijuana business.
Yeah, that was a great move there. Laundering money.
I was told, I thought it was medicinal.
Right.
Meanwhile, the Indians in America,
just so you know, the transaction was illegal. That if you buy a pot shop, you have to get your own license per California law. And Redding Rancheria hasn't done that.
Well, they're just going to assume the license of Sundial Collective.
They're trying.
You can't do that.
And you can't do that.
Right.
And we caught the city on it, and the city's doing the backpedal as we speak right now. Oh, we're going to talk to the Department of Cannabis Control.
Yeah, we need clarification on that.
Now, think of this.
Of course they do.
Think of this. Native Americans have some of the highest drug abuse in the nation as far as their youth. So we have the Redding Rancheria, which has its own medical facility and doctors to treat people, and now they're going to get involved in the marijuana business so they can then move that into their new casino. And I just bet you're going to see, and across the country we see that the Native Americans declare their property as sovereign nation, and therefore no drug laws are applicable on their property. And so we're going to see some of that go on here. And that's why they're getting into it for one reason. They call themselves wanting to diversify to protect their investments. They're in the drug business for one reason, and that's money. And they want your kids. That's what they want. They want your kids.
So, because they also are promoting no on Prop 27. Okay. For obvious reasons, they want to keep gambling in their own home or in their own casinos. Well, I found it very interesting that the reasons that they are no on Prop is, don't be fooled, a massive expansion of online gambling is not a solution to homelessness. Oh, but buying pot shops is. Or increases risk of underage and problem gambling. But pot doesn't?
This is how...
This is like the kind of thing where you have to be high in order to follow the argument.
Yeah.
This is how evil it is. So we had Rick Girola, he's our agricultural commission, show up at a board of supervisor meeting 2 weeks ago. And when he reported for monies in the county, he had a side report on what cannabis potentially could bring to the county. Now, this is the same Rick Girola that last year tried to push hemp on the county. And the county went for it in an experiment. And there was just two people. It was Rick Girola and an ex-board of supervisor that wanted to, quote unquote, grow hemp. Well, isn't that amazing that that board of supervisors now up and apparently is trying to get a permit to grow marijuana industrial-wise in the city of Reading? So, isn't that funny? Well, I wonder what's in that supervisor's barns out there in the county area.
Yeah, see, it's just... And so, okay, well, it's everywhere, so why fight it?
Oh, please. Oh, my God. Let me just explain this.
Yes, please do. Because, I mean, I already know the answer, but yeah.
I know. Let's, why fight it? I mean,
yeah, why, fight it?
Why don't you
People
take,
want it.
Yeah, yeah, go out there. Take a hike through the forest. Go ahead. You know.
Let's to Mount Shasta Vista. Better
yeah.
Yeah, let's I want to camp out.
Yeah, let's go on a camp out to Mount Shasta Vistas. Come on.
Hold on. I promised you that I was going to give you a state of marijuana in Shasta County. And we flew the county last week. So let me tell you, for your listeners out there in the Smalls Farms track and Two Feathers, which is out in...
Out by the Veterans Cemetery.
Veterans Cemetery going south. That's Tim Garman's area and gets into Les Baugh's area. Massive amounts of marijuana. Let's go up to Mary Rickert's area in Round Mountain. So
these are supervisors.
Yes.
These are our supervisors.
They are supervisors.
So let's go up to Mary Rickert's area, and let's go to Round Mountain, and let's go to the cemetery and the big power station up there. Everybody kind of knows that as a landmark as you enter Round Mountain there across from Round Mountain Store. If you go south from that area toward the next mountain range, completely inundated with marijuana. And we're talking about commercial scale like we see in Siskiyou, big 150-foot greenhouses. Let's come back down into Jones Valley. And you know what? I found a grow there that's been going for over 20 years.
Oh, no fool.
And it is a huge commercial grow, multiple greenhouses, and it's out there on Backbone. And so for those of you listening on Backbone... We're coming for you. Just want you to know that. We're coming for you. So we do have a sheriff. He is trying to take it out. We do have a couple of deputies. They are pretty much on their own. We're not getting the help that we need from the state. We're not getting the state environmental reports that we need. We want to file felony environmental crimes. We know that, for example, all those grows in Round Mountain, they're using all the water out of Cow Creek, and they're polluting the water that other people drink. Meanwhile, the ACID canal is dry, and our farmers and our ranchers are being fined out of existence, and we're seeing farms that have been in the family for 150 years closing up. But the cannabis growers, because of Newsom... because of Newsom giving $100 million and trying to force counties to have more dispensaries, that's how they want to do it, Aaron. They want to force more dispensaries on every county. And so, for example, Lassen talking about wanting to get money for enforcement, the state is saying, hey, if you allow us to go ahead and put dispensaries in your community, we'll give you that $1 million for enforcement. Well, all that does is bring in more crime, more marijuana use, and more damage to our youth.
And they'll never see that $1 million.
And they'll never see that $1 million.
Well, you just dollar for dollar. Do we? I mean, at one point, and this, gosh, it's probably been 2 years ago, for every dollar that you took in on tax revenue,
it cost you an additional 10. Oh, 10, yeah.
But I don't know what it is now.
Yeah.
It's probably high. It's got to be higher.
Well, I mean, when you talk about the environmental damage and even the cleanup costs.
Superfund. This is Superfund.
Okay. In some of the places, absolutely.
Yeah. And one of the things that I learned at a symposium one time was the marijuana people really like to take you away from the subject of marijuana. They want attention away from them. So now let's talk about opiates. We had the opiate epidemic. You know, that takes away the attention.
Sure.
And now it's fentanyl. And I'm not saying these aren't dangerous. These are totally, totally dangerous drugs. But it takes away the attention. Yep. And we're cutting pot with these drugs now. And now the newest and latest is the drugs, I don't know, where remember what it's up, but it's used on animals to tranquilize animals.
Ketamine.
And and they're putting
that. And they mix that with it?
And now they're mixing that in your pot. And the Narcan doesn't cut it. Narcan will not bring you back.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Well, the hard truth about Narcan is a lot of times when they bring these people back with Narcan, it brings their body back, but their brain's already dead.
Oh, yeah.
So I forget who I was talking to, but they had spoken with a neuroscience guy down in, by Palo Alto, down in that area, Stanford. And he said, we have warehouses basically filled with people who are brain dead because they hit them with the Narcan. Their body came back, but their mind was dead at the time. And we'll never return. And now what do you do with these people?
Right.
So I just, wow. And like, why we would see, for me, the stores having a dope store in your neighborhood, on your street, next to a regular business, anywhere else. My my view on it, you know, if I had kids still, if my kids were little, you know, when you see a store, that's a legitimate business. And so that means that what's in there is normal and people should buy it and, you know, if you want it. So it's just normalizing all this. And people will say the same thing about bars other than bars have been around for an eon. And I think we got that figured out. But you add this dope thing, and then a lot of it's marketed to children.
Oh, for sure.
You've got a lot of pictures of, you know, the free backpack day, you know, with all your little help supplies so you can be getting dope training.
The pot shop up on East Cypress. It's called Cookies.
Or how about even the one?
What could go wrong?
Or how about the one on 270 on Market Street going out of town where you have Dill's Deli going about all
sign.
Yeah, the sign right on the side of the road, Dill's Deli, talking about all the sandwiches that were sampled and the marijuana advertising's right with it. So they're one in the same.
It is a total normalization.
And I guess, you know, as a citizen, so, you know, people are thinking, well, I can't do anything about any of this.
Oh, you can.
But you super can. You can look at who you're electing, how they're getting funded. You look at all that. But moreover than that, I would say you are the customers of the businesses, the actual businesses, the deli, the whatever it is that's going to be next to the dope store. And
the gardening supply on 273.
And there's that.
Oh,
and there are some
the one on Athens.
But some of those people are claiming, you know, well, I'm just the landlord. But see, all that is part and parcel of the problem, whether you're the landlord, whether you own the dope store, whether you facilitated that because you were on city council or the planning commission or whatever, and you're normalizing that for your community. So as a community, I would never patronize a business that I knew was tied to that or furthering that, because that's my way of saying that's my immediate way of saying no.
Right. Let me just say that there is a gentleman that sits on the Redding City Planning Department.
Okay.
Or Planning Commission.
Okay.
That during one of the meetings that had to do with allowing a new cultivation site out by Westwood Village said, oh, are you going to bring in some samples for us?
Huh. I wonder what team he's on.
Huh.
That's unbelievable.
I'm guessing he's not fighting back even quietly.
Well, I wonder if the Redding Board of Realtors is actually applying the California Disclosure Real Estate Law and whether they are actually doing what they're supposed to and disclosing all these marijuana properties. Now, a lot of the properties that we deal with when we go to do eradications, they're called trespass grows. At least that's what they tell the deputies. And that's so they can obviate the legal process. So basically you show up, you try to do an eradication, you get a couple of illegal aliens that run away. Sometimes we capture them, sometimes we don't. And then when the county goes to follow up saying, hey, there's all this environmental damage, we want to recoup some of our expenses, the homeowner or landowner down in wherever else in California says, oh, I didn't know. That's just vacant.
Oh, right.
It's vacant property. How did I know that what they were doing on it? So we are asking, and we've come up with a group of things. We tried to go in front of the board and ask the board to declare a state of emergency on marijuana for Shasta County.
Right.
So Pat Minturn took it forward. He talked to the sheriff, and I get it. No sheriff wants to declare a state of emergency and makes it look like they don't have control of their county. We don't have control of our county, folks, just so you know. All right, so...
It's a numbers game. Law enforcement's always a numbers game.
Yeah. Right.
So if you live in some town and a giant cartel of car thieves shows up, or carjackers, or burglars, or whatever it is, law enforcement was already busy. So the idea that you can have an influx of this level of
crime,
drugs, just illegal activity, and they're going to be able to just make that go away. People go, "Why don't they go arrest them?" I'm like, "Oh boy,
the counties don't really want to know how bad the marijuana issue is, right?" So we counted using GIS. We went and we took a sample of Shasta. Let's just use Shasta County because we know what the numbers are for Siskiyou. So we took a sample of Shasta County, and I came up with about 7,000 illegal grows. That's was our number, extrapolating out just using a map, going zooming in and then doing a per square mile.
Sure.
How many? Okay, so we figured that out. The state actually has an even better program. They have a program called Cannavision, but the state did not want to give that program out because what was happening is that they would put that out, show all the satellite images, show all the numbers, and then the bad guys would come in and try to rob all the good marijuana growers. So they decided,
but it's a legal business.
Yeah, it's a legal business. We don't do it anymore.
Wow.
So
we have to take a really quick break. We will come right back this week.
Political donations.
Let's come back.
Let's talk about that.
Well, you're listening to We the People, and you'll be able to find this on the archive later this afternoon at wethepeopleradio.us.
Oh! Who said I see walking in these woods? Why, it's Little Red Riding Hood. Hey there, Little Red Riding Hood. You sure are looking good. You're everything a big bad wolf could want. Listen to me, Little Red Riding Hood. I don't think...
her kids in at night, kisses her husband, turns off the light, talks to God, says, Lord, help me accept what I can't change. But until I learn to do that, thanks for the Mary Jane. 'Cause you know life will let you down. Love's gonna leave you lonely. Sometimes the only way to get by is to get high. Yeah, sometimes the only way to get by is to get high.
Yeah. Well, you know, there are a lot of people who think that, actually. That is the logic in a lot of this. And, oh, terrific, now we have dope stores, so I can just go down there and get it. So before we do the stats on political, how many people who would never have, gone to wherever you got to go to buy pot, how many people are using it now that really didn't before because now you can just go in a store and get it? What's the increase in usage?
Estimated about 30% of the American population will try marijuana recreationally, and about 18% will become addicted in some fashion.
Because now they can get it pretty much
easily to get.
Oh, yeah. What a good idea.
Hmm.
And you talk about going into a pot shop, and they'll be like, so what is your problem? Like, well, I'm just not sleeping good. Oh, well, try this strain. Like, really? You're going to
doctors?
Yeah. Like, you're going to take that recommendation.
Well, they're all experts.
Oh,
all right. Yeah, you can't pretty much go anywhere. In fact, yesterday we were out and you walk through a store and it's like...
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Pothead. Yeah. Yeah. I know. You just want to wear a you need to have like a little sign in your pocket that's like, are you a pothead fucker? Are you a pothead fucker?
Skunk alert.
Yeah,
skunk alert.
Exactly.
So the outdoor grows are harvesting. They'll be done by Thanksgiving, but the hoop houses are going strong 24/7, right? Okay. And talk about environmental disaster. You know, they're all using propane or sulfur generators or using wood, burning down the forest, anything they can do to increase the CO2. All the plastic that comes and goes, turns into microplastic into the environment. Just horrible. But coming back to Bill, because Bill, during the break, Bill was saying, you know, this, Officer Joe, is an interactive show. And we have some comments out there of people that are interested in what's going on. Bill, what did you hear from our public out there?
I've just got a couple folks in the chat room want to hear the political races that are and candidates that are involved in taking donations, let's say, from
pot growers, pot shops. Cultivators.
So because of the FPPC site.
Fair Political Practices Commission.
Thank you, Aaron. Because of the FPP site, we can actually look at where the donations are going to all of these candidates. But, and there is a but, the pot folks are very good at hiding. You know, it's just a ubiquitous name. It doesn't say like, so there's like the Honeybee Organic Growers Association. Well, that sounds like, man, we should be supporting
that. Support those folks.
Hell no. That's
a front for
that's
whatever.
For a collective, pot collective, and giving.
Yeah, they don't ever say pot collective.
No, they never say pot collective.
None of them say that.
No.
So we have, for Board of Supervisors, which we're focusing on because we're county, I think that the city is lost. They're already up in smoke. I'll work on them, but they're kind of lost in my game. But county is not. So we got two pro marijuana, and they will tell you they're not pro marijuana, but they are pro marijuana candidates. We've got Aaron Reznor and Kevin Cry, and they have both taken lots of marijuana money. And in the case of Kevin, I spoke to you. Hey, Kevin, how you doing? Spoke to him personally, and he said, look, he said, I needed the money, and if you're willing to give me the donation, I'll give the money back. Yeah, but Kevin, you work with our kids. You work with our young kids, okay? What's going on in your brain that thinks it's okay to take marijuana money? Now, Erin actually held her fundraiser up at a famous winery here up in the old Anselmo Vineyard, which was a classic historical grow site for many
years. After he left.
After Anselmo left.
He's a hardcore anti-marijuana guy.
Anselmo doesn't want anything to do with marijuana. So she went and held her fundraiser there. And then she took lots of marijuana and money into her campaign. And she initially talked to me. But when I started talking to her about the dangers of marijuana, those conversations quickly have stopped. And I haven't heard anything. So one of those two candidates, both which have taken lots of marijuana money, are going to be a board of supervisor. And we're going to have to... I'm gonna demand that anything that comes up with marijuana, like with Rick Garola trying to push it again within our county, I'm gonna demand that they recuse themselves because they are tainted. This is corruption.
And these aren't $20 donations because they went to a dinner. This is $4,900.
Right.
Maxing it out.
Yeah.
And they get real smart about that, Aaron, because somebody makes a $4,900 nation, and all of a sudden their friend makes a $4,900 nation, and their friend makes a $4,900. So in the end, but it's all being paid for through that one person. We know it. And we see people that support the marijuana industry that have been, let's see, spanked in the past, have been fined for illegal grading. We see people like that that are also donating into these campaigns. So it makes you wonder why. The problem is with all these donations is you don't really know who these people are unless you're very acquainted with all the people in the city of Reading. And I'm not. I have to depend on Kathy for that.
Well, and this is my thing with the election coming up because, you know, you're going to have two open seats in the city council. And these are all things that we all should be concerned about.
Yeah,
and
I don't care where you live.
Yeah, I don't care.
There's a way to look it up where you live. It might not be the Fair Political Practices Commission.
And I just say, if you're not asking these hard questions of our potential leaders, then you're part of the problem.
And kind of drilling in. So you guys work in the prevention industry. Mm-hmm. So let's say somebody lived in a community and they were like, I don't know anything about this. And I've never looked up campaign donations. I really don't know what any of this is about. I'm not really part of a big group, so there'd be no one to tell. But they could go to their local folks like you who educate in the schools and all that. And likely those people are active and on this, and they could join the effort.
Right.
Are we allowed to give it a phone number?
Absolutely.
Kathy, go ahead. Phone number? Any phone numbers we can give out?
Well, I give out bills.
Oh, Kathy was just looking at me. Kathy was looking at me, and she was going like, "Do you know how many of the potheads are going to call and threaten me?" So
we're going to make them look it up.
All
the wheels will come off.
I would say if you're interested, please contact the station, and we'll make contact, and we'll be happy to follow up with you.
Reach out to
because this is dangerous.
Call Bill first.
We've been threatened. We've been threatened, okay? We get threatened with violence all the time.
Uh-huh.
We have very strange people that engage us and make all kinds of weird things, contacts. We've been victims of violence already, so we're very careful. You know, we're very careful out there in the community because pot people, we know that marijuana increases violent tendencies in a certain segment of the population, and so we have to be careful.
And the people who dabble in that industry, who might, you know, say, lease a building to a dope store, they get very wounded if you talk about that in public. So, you know, they'll marshal other businesses in other industries to go defend them and try to silence you, which is interesting. Because,
they are not patriots.
Yeah, because some of those people are all big on, you know, the Constitution, except for that First Amendment. That's stupid First Amendment. It's very interesting, though, how this industry has wormed its way into
everyday life.
Because you would think, like, back in the day, I mean, these were, quote, the potheads, right? You could spot them a mile away. And now it's all inside
and
baseball.
And sadly, we're all guilty of it. We all, even though I'm terribly against it, if we're not speaking out and doing something, then we're part of the problem.
Yeah, we're letting it go.
We're letting it. We're normalizing.
Sure.
And we can't.
So I don't care if all you do is forward, you know, all these shows on pot. Like, I was talking to a relative whose wife had cancer, and I guess she's taking CBD gummies to sleep because her friend told her they really were good and they didn't have any THC in them. They weren't bad for you. Well, she just got done with cancer, for God's sake. And I'm like, hello, you do know that anything that comes from the cannabis plant, as we learned from Dr. Reese, causes cancer. I go, I don't think that's your best choice.
We just provided a report to Tim Garman because he asked us, Supervisor Tim Garman. He asked us at a prior Board of Supervisor meeting about CBD.
Uh-huh.
And so our research says that, well, CBD will not kill you, Aaron. CBD itself, if it's pure CBD. But it really, most of the time, you're going to get some THC in there. But the problem with CBD is, one, it's not FDA approved and cannot be. It cannot go through the rigorous standard. But it's all the molds and toxic pesticides that go along with it. So all these people that are rubbing this, you know, mother's little helper on their skin, thinking that it's helping them, yeah, you're just rubbing chemicals on yourself, folks.
Chemicals. And we asked Dr. Reese because, you know, I'm a curious individual. So I said, well, hey, what if you grew it in a lab? Like, what if there were no chemicals and you could actually prove that? And they talked to me like I was, you know,
three.
Yeah. If it comes from the cannabis plant, it causes cancer. I was like, okay, thank you.
You mean it doesn't prevent emphysema? Because I used to hear that from the people that were smoking all the time. They'd be puffing and coughing prevents emphysema. Oh, I get potheads that tell us that all the time. You know, I've got COPD, and you know, I use my cannabis, I feel better because it helps me breathe.
Well, of course you feel better.
How do you know you feel better?
You take a little morphine, you feel better. You can still breathe.
Well, it's just and so people have this thing that it's a natural product and that pharmaceuticals are poisonous. And hey, you know what? Water's poisonous in volume.
Well, so
if you hold your head underneath it. But.
Yeah. So this is you know, from a neurologist that, you know, my sister goes to a neurologist, but that's beside the point. But anyways, but
not really. Now we all know
she. You know, you start talking about pot. Maybe that'll help with some of my symptoms and stuff. And he said, well, here's the problem. I would never, ever recommend it.
Yeah.
He says, there's no dosing standards. You don't know what you're getting.
You're right.
I mean, like, who in their right mind would even allow that?
They're having the huge cannabis symposium conference in Las Vegas, you know, with all the lights and the showgirls and the strippers and the whole nine yards.
I didn't know there was such a thing, though.
Yes, there is. Oh, it's once a year, and they market, and it's all the glitz. But, you know, there's a lot of doctors. They like to put a lot of doctors on their marquee,
right.
But they're all PhDs. You don't see really a lot of MDs.
They're not actual medical.
No, they're not. The real doctors that take a look at marijuana in America, they go, no, there's better things for us to take and things that are actually go
more
through.
More highly controlled and maybe weren't mixed with spray adhesive and carbofuron.
Right.
You know, before
right. Spray adhesive. What do we use spray adhesive
spray
for?
Spray adhesive. Make why, your butts bigger, why, man. Don't you know anything?
Why would we put spray adhesive on the cannabis plant? Why?
Yeah.
Oh, we want to increase potency. Oh, that's good.
And it
for
just
you.
Falls off when you process it later. Nobody actually, you know, ingests the spray adhesive.
But you know, that's occurring up in Mount Shasta. And just because that, what is it, 139,000 pounds of toxic waste flows into the aquifer every year and goes into Lake Shasta
to
and the turbidity.
Yeah, so we've got, like, I don't know, 30 seconds or something. Thanks for coming in. This is super, like, I don't know, we could talk about this forever, obviously.
And we will.
Yeah,
so we'll do this some more soon. But if people have questions or comments or want to hear some specific information, get a hold of us. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. And our guests were Kathy and Officer Joe. And Bill's not really a guest, but he's kind of a guest. And next hour we'll have Phil Kirpin on, so stick with us.
Whether we like it or not, the best I can tell, the world's gone to hell and they're all gonna miss it a lot. All the whiskey in Lynchburg, Tennessee just couldn't hit the spot. Got $100 bill, you can keep your pills, friend, it's all going to pot. I got $100 bill, you can keep your pills, friend, cause it's all going to pot.
Good afternoon, and welcome to the second hour of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff.
What do you have for us, Bill?
Well, Aaron, we have a sponsor this hour. It's Pepe Machinery, our local John Deere ag and turf dealer. And they're everything John Deere. Just go up and see them. Lots of green in the yard right now. You can get tractors, mowers.
It's not grass because it hasn't rained in forever.
Yeah, not that. But we did get some rain yesterday. It could be greening up. So go up and see them. They're located at 3119 Twin View Boulevard, right south of Phil's Propeller. And or you can give them a call at 530-226-9226 or catch them on the web at
PapeMachinery.com. There you go. P-A-P-E, just P-A-P-E. Just to be
That's
clear.
Right. Yeah.
It's nice. You know, when you do the little promotion for them, you don't say the phone number 17 times.
Yeah.
Because I got to tell you, when they say the phone number 17 times, it makes me want to, you know, stab a fork in my eye.
Yeah.
Or that of someone else.
Yeah, the last time you did that, it was kind of bloody and gruesome.
Yeah, it was just a mess.
Try not to do that.
Yeah, Halloween. Halloween's coming, though.
Yeah, that's true.
So let's see. Our guest this hour, we're gonna segue over into something kind of totally different. Just in case you weren't with us the first hour, we went into the cannabis guys again, evil cannabis guys, especially the illegal growers. So I hope you'll go to the webpage for today. It is September the 18th. Gosh, the print's small. Senior citizen moment there. I couldn't read the print on my own computer. September the 18th, and you will find the Los Angeles Times article there, Promises Up in Smoke. So if you live in California, you might already know about this a little bit. I guarantee you, you have no idea. That's a very long article. Very long. Out of the Los Angeles Times, too. And if you live somewhere else in the country and you're like, well, we don't have those problems, definitely read the article because it's coming to you. If you live in a rural area, absolutely coming to you. So our guest this hour is Phil Kirpin, and we have had a heck of a time getting our schedules together, so we're happy to have him back. He's the president of American Commitment. They engage in critical public policy fights over the size and intrusiveness of government through direct advocacy, strategy, policy analysis, and grassroots mobilization. Working with key partners, American Commitment delivers timely, effective public policy research to the broader free market movement. They are dedicated to restoring and protecting the American commitment to free markets, economic growth, constitutionally limited government, property rights, and individual freedom. So if you disagree with any of those things, you probably don't listen to our show, and you're not going to like our guest. But if you like those things, it's about time we heard from somebody about that. So Phil's article that I have posted for you is Democrats want to raid Medicare to pay for Obamacare again. And I don't know, Phil, if you still want to talk about that, or I've posted the article so they can absolutely read it. But you go wherever you'd like.
All right. Yeah, that sounds good. We could talk about that. That ended up being one of the three or four main parts of the so-called Inflation Reduction Act,
yeah,
the comically misnamed spending bill that the Democrats jammed through and then celebrated in a huge party at the White House while stocks were crashing, and we got another bad inflation report, one of the most remarkable displays of tone deafness I think we've ever seen. And the other thing that happened a week after they passed that bill, where they allegedly were going to reduce the deficit, the president said he's going to spend $1 trillion bailing out student loans without even a vote of Congress, just on his own, which made a mockery of the whole thing as well. So, and we could talk about that. We could talk about whether there's going to be a spending deal in Congress this month. You know, I'm happy to talk about any of the issues you mentioned there. And
well, you know, just for the folks who may not go to the site and read the article, how did, because this happens every election season, so pretty much every other year, the Democrats start something about how, oh my God, if the Republicans get in power, they're going to get rid of Medicare and Social Security, which of course they aren't, but it happens every time. And it's interesting to me that they don't ever, it never comes out that they're screwing over Medicare when they pass these gigantic bills.
Yeah, well, the Democrats have the advantage of the media being on their team. So they get, you know, I state something that's completely factual, which is that they're taking over $200 billion out of Medicare prescription drug spending in this bill. And I don't know, PolitiFact calls me false. I don't know, because they asked some Democrat, they asked AARP if it's true, and AARP said, oh, no, not true at all. And they said, okay, well, so it's a, I mean, this is what they do. They go to other liberal interest groups, and they all sing from the same song sheet. But that bill that they passed, Build Back Better, Inflation Reduction Act, whatever comical false name they want to call it, it really had two areas of spending. And, you know, obviously there are a lot of subcategories, but it had two big areas of spending. One was all of the green energy giveaways and the electric cars and wind and solar and Green New Deal and all of that. The other was an extension of supersized Obamacare subsidies to the insurance companies. And they only admitted that they're doing it for 3 years. Really, they want to make it permanent. They essentially lifted the roof on who can qualify for subsidies, so that as premiums skyrocket, as they've been doing now for a decade, people who are in Obamacare will be shielded from those costs largely because they're shifted onto taxpayers. And by the way, when you tell the insurance companies raise premiums as much as you want and your customers are not going to pay it, the taxpayers are, guess what they do? They raise premiums through the roof. Because the vast majority of their customers are indifferent to the premiums because of the subsidies. So those are the two main areas of spending, was the Green New Deal, you know, green energy type subsidies, and the giveaways to the insurance companies. And then how did they pay for that? Well, there were three ways, basically, that they paid for all the spending in that bill. One of them was the doubling of the size of the IRS and the 87,000 new agents that are going to be, you know, harassing everyone, and that's got a lot of attention, and deservedly so. It should get a lot of attention. It's pretty outrageous. The second is the new tax on financial statement income for publicly traded companies, and that's going to cause a lot of problems as well. But the third, which is the one that they kind of tried to sell as a positive, is they raided about $250 billion out of Medicare prescription drug spending, more or less, depending on whether you count the gimmicks as part of that or not. And they've got some gimmicks in there as well. But essentially, they've got two forms of price controls that they impose on prescription drugs. One is an inflation cap, where the price of the drugs can't go up more than inflation in any given year. There are two problems with that. One is that drugs have only been going up for about 2% a year the last couple of years, while inflation's been 8%. So if you tell drug companies you're now limited forever to an inflation cap, they're probably going to start taking the maximum immediately because they don't know what the future is going to hold. And so in the near term, it probably increases drug prices because they've been rising much less than overall inflation. The other problem with that is it's going to cause launch prices for drugs to be a lot higher because you can always cut them, but you can't raise them more than inflation in any given year. So it's actually, I think...
So everything will hit the market higher.
Yeah, and yeah, exactly. And then the other form of price control they have, which doesn't start until 2026, is they've got this so-called negotiation where it's not really a negotiation because if the manufacturer doesn't take the Secretary of HHS's price, they get taxed 95% of their total sales of that product, which, you know, their projected revenue from that is zero because they don't think any company would ever actually say no. And so they set this up, but it's only for 15 drugs starting in 2026. So what does that do? Well, now if you're a drug company, you want to stay off that list no matter what. So instead of pricing your drug to get maximum revenue, you're going to price your drug to not quite make the top of that list so that it won't be quite as used. Maybe the price will be higher, but you'll sell less. And so that's going to create a perverse incentive also. But the bottom line from all of these provisions is, you know, they're seeking to take a lot of money out of prescription drug spending. And especially with the price controls, you know, the biggest, most successful drugs, they're going to have their price essentially set by the Secretary of Health and Human Services. What that does for R&D and the development of new drugs is it basically says, you know, if you have the most success possible, your upside is limited now. It's going to be clipped. It's going to be capped by that government price control program. And so that would have a major negative impact on R&D, and as a consequence, depending on which model you believe in, somewhere between the low ball of 15 from the Congressional Budget Office and 200-some from the University of Chicago, new drugs will not be developed as a consequence of those price controls being there. So in essence, by raiding hundreds of billions of dollars out of Medicare drug spending to spend on, you know, Obamacare subsidies and green energy subsidies, seniors are going to have access to fewer new drugs, and I think the prices for a lot of drugs are actually going to be higher rather than lower. So I think it's a horrible deal for seniors. It's a good deal for some of the health insurance giants like UnitedHealth, who, you know, get the subsidies from the Obamacare subsidy expansion. And also own a pharmacy benefit manager, and so they like the idea of government setting drug prices lower. You know, and AARP makes $800 million a year from UnitedHealth, so of course they're out there promoting it and talking about how great it is, but I think it's a really bad deal for seniors to raid Medicare to fund Obamacare. And of course, you know, we've seen this before. The original Obamacare bill did something similar. They cut Medicare benefits to pay for an expansion of Obamacare, and they paid a political price for that. Whether they'll pay a political price for it again this year, I think, depends on whether Republicans sort of make the case and talk about it, because so far they're not, as far as I've seen.
No, it's pretty quiet. I don't think that's really out there, which is really unhelpful when you get to the part later, then people are like, well, why is my Medicare so expensive? And then for all the people who have chronic illness and they invent some, you know, I'm sure people who have whatever kind of chronic thing, they've come out with some sort of medication and you find out it's $3,500 a month. And you're like, oh, okay, well, I guess I won't be taking that.
Yeah, well, one of the things I think we could see happen is, you know, they didn't originally have this in the bill, but there was a problem with Senate rules and the parliamentarian, and they had to add a provision where if a drug company withdraws all of their drugs from Medicare and Medicaid completely, they can't be subject to the price control. And so what I think you're going to see, if this takes effect, is I think you're going to see drug companies spinning out. When they have a big blockbuster product, they're going to spin it off as its own company, and then it's just not going to be available on Medicare or Medicaid. If you've got something that people are going to want enough to pay out of pocket for, then I think you're going to start to see that on, you know, some of these blockbuster drugs. So that's a risk also with this.
Yeah, and that doesn't take a rocket scientist to see that, you know. And of course, I think the way that'll all be, we'll use the term covered in the media loosely, but the way that'll all be covered is that drug companies are greedy, evil, you know, monsters, and they hate old people and want them to die.
Well, but I mean, they're going to respond to whatever the incentives are that are set up by the government, and so, you know, they'll say that, but you know, they're companies. I mean, they got to look out for their own bottom line.
Well, of course. I mean, most people would know that, but that's how it'll be spun, is that they owe everybody everything. They're supposed to all work for free.
Yeah, I'm actually kind of amazed that the drug companies did such a poor job of explaining what they do and why it's a bad idea to have government-imposed price controls. Because, you know, most people kind of get that government price controls are a bad idea. You know, we've seen it. We saw it with the general wage and price controls under Nixon. We saw it with gasoline price controls. People kind of, most people, I think, understand that when government sets a below-market price for something, you get shortages, you get inferior quality, you get black market activity. You know, the idea that somehow drugs are different, that government can set the price and not cause, you know, these adverse consequences, is wrong. And, you know, it should be easy to demonstrate that it's wrong. And in particular, I think it's actually even more dangerous than price controls on other things because, you know, let's say that they actually are able to, you know, impose the price controls, that drug companies don't change their behavior to get around it, or, you know, some of the things that I think are likely. But let's say it actually, quote-unquote, worked the way they wanted it to and dramatically lowered the price for a bunch of drugs. Well, if you do that, you're going to get a lot less drugs, right?
Yeah,
you're now kidding. You're now forcing them to sell at below market price. You're going to get a lot less drugs. And, of course, the difference between drugs and a lot of other products is, you know, the cost of producing one more drug is very low. The marginal cost of drugs that already exist producing another pill is low. But the cost of producing a drug that doesn't exist yet is very, very high. And so if you mess up the incentives, it's not the drugs that already exist that there are shortages of, for the most part. It's going to be drugs that don't exist, will not exist, will not be developed. And, you know, that's really insidious because that's not a thing like gas lines where people see them and they're angry and they have to deal with them and then they get lifted and there's, you know, the backlash sort of limits the damage of the policy. With this, you know, people won't know what they're missing out on necessarily, and so you don't necessarily have a backlash that reverses the policy. And so if this does what they intended to do, you know, it could be really insidious and difficult to reverse. I sort of suspect that it will not do what they intended to do, but rather, you know, as I mentioned, for a variety of reasons, it's going to lead to lower prices rather than higher prices, and there's going to be some perverse incentives. If we want to be really cynical, they might have set the price controls to start in 2026 because they just want to shake the tree for a lot of political donations and then keep delaying it forever. I've seen that trick before, too.
No. No, just make it up so that they can scare everybody and we'll fix it. You got to help us. That hardly ever happens. We've got to take a really quick break, Phil. We'll be right back with our guest, Phil Kirpin. You are listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
You know there ain't no rest for the wicked. Money don't grow on trees. We got bills to pay, we got mouths to feed. There ain't nothing in this world for free. I know we can't slow down, we can't hold back. Though you know we wish we could. I know there ain't no rest for the wicked until we close our eyes for good.
And he'll bust out the windows, put his family on food stamps. Now he's a big spender, no food on the table, and the bills ain't paid, cause he's spending on cigarettes and PGA. They'll turn us all into beggars, cause they're easier to please. They're feeding our people that government cheese.
Aren't they ever?
Yeah, gotta love that government cheese.
Unbelievable. So, Phil, with the budget stuff coming up, people do not understand how that process works, and what goes haywire with it, and where we're likely to go this year with it. You wanna?
Yeah. Well, it doesn't work.
Yeah,
the process is extremely broken, has been for quite a long time. But basically, the bill to fund the government's got to pass this month, some bill in some form, or else we get a government shutdown come October. Right now, we've got a bit of an impasse with the Democrats that control both the House and Senate because Joe Manchin was told that if he voted for that big spending bill, that they would attach a permitting reform bill, including provisions to approve a pipeline that he really wants, a natural gas pipeline in West Virginia, to the bill to fund the government as a way to force the liberals in the House to swallow it. And what do you know? It looks like they're going to renege on that.
Lucy in the football.
Yeah, isn't that shocking?
It's shocking.
You know, the leadership still claims they're going to do it, but there are a lot of liberals now in both the House and Senate that have said they will not vote for that, which means they've got a problem. Either either Joe Manchin's going to actually shut down the government over this, which I find extremely unlikely, or he's going to cave and look like a complete joker, clown, loser, idiot, which I guess is more likely. But, of course, you know, Republicans have a role in this, too, because the bill to fund the government usually needs 60 votes in the Senate, and it's usually negotiated. And, of course, the big thing that they want is they want, this is what's called a continuing resolution, just funds the government at last year's levels. They want that to go into next year in the hopes that they can win the Congress and then do new spending bills for the whole year that are much more reasonable and so forth. Whereas the Democrats want it to just go into December so they can come back after the election and with no accountability using the votes of a bunch of people who just lost, you know, shoot the moon with massive spending bills. And so that's kind of the, you know, there are always a million issues, but those are the two main ones right now, is whether the permitting reform is going to be included and how long that bill to fund the government is going to be. But this is, you know, this is the way it's been on funding the government for years now, even decades, is they don't do their work. They don't pass a real budget resolution with real funding levels that then leads to appropriations bills and get everything done well ahead of time. Instead, they wait until the last minute, and leadership, you know, comes from on high and produces something that maybe the committees haven't even seen. And they have a series of these short-term ones, and then finally, eventually, they do some massive omnibus that just has, you know, everything in the kitchen sink in it, and they dare people to vote against it. And, you know, this has been the pattern, and, you know, this is why we've got essentially no control in federal spending at all. I mean, you know, we had so many of these crazy COVID spending bills that, you know, got a lot of attention, although none of them were stopped. But people didn't pay any attention to the regular annual spending bills, which were going up like crazy the last few years also. And so, I mean, just the regular funding bills to fund the government are up something like $1 trillion of where they were last year, and we'll see how much more they increase them in these new ones for next year. But there's no spending discipline at all. And, of course, that's where we're facing the inflationary environment that we're facing. People want to blame the Federal Reserve, but, you know, 90% of the federal spending, the increase that we've had over the last couple of years, was financed by, not by real borrowing, but by the Federal Reserve buying treasuries. It's through the creation of money. And so, you know, the money creation that we've seen and the inflation that we're suffering is a direct consequence of the government spending. And, you know, they lie and say, oh, we're cutting government spending, Inflation Reduction Act. Of course, that bill didn't cut any spending at all. And as I mentioned in the last segment, you know, even independent of what they do in this government spending bill, we've got a president who thinks he can spend $1 trillion on discharging student loans without Congress even voting on it, which makes a mockery of the power of the purse, but also means there's going to be, you know, if that's not stopped in the courts, there's going to be substantial additional inflationary pressure on top of everything else from that move.
Yeah, not to mention the tax increases that are rolling down the hill if that passes.
Yeah, you know, they've got a whole bunch of tax increases that they want. The only one they were able to get so far of any significance was that tax on the financial statement income of publicly traded companies. But look, there's no question. You look at what the Democrat candidates are saying. You look at what their platform is. They want to let the Trump tax cuts expire for the most part, and that means we're looking at a big tax hike coming, you know, I guess 2026 is when those expire under current law. So, you know, that's the other big question, is whether you're going to, you know, and the Democrats have this idea that, well, you know, the solution to inflation is to raise taxes and, you know, crash the economy, and then demand will go down and inflation will go down. And it's kind of like, the problem with that is when you raise taxes, you reduce the quantity of goods and services that are produced as well. And so, yeah, you might have less money, but it's chasing less goods and services. You know, you're not going to really solve the problem. To really solve the problem, we want less money. We want more goods and services. We want to cut taxes and expand the supply side, deregulate, and so forth. And so, you know, I think they've got the exact wrong idea, especially business taxes. You put business taxes on, that's going to have more of an adverse impact on the real economy, on production, on how many goods and services are out there to be purchased, than it does on, you know, the amount of money that's needed to finance government spending. And so I think the Democrats have got everything backwards economically right now.
Has the administration ever come out with how they intend to pay for that student loan bill?
Nope. No, not a word. I think, which is what's so hilarious about the timing of this, right? Because they did this spending bill where they said, oh, you know, the tax hikes and the expansion of the IRS are going to bring in so much money that this bill will actually reduce the deficit, which I disagree with, by the way, but that's their claim. But then the next week, they announced that by executive order, they're going to spend three times as much as they claimed they saved the previous week, with no explanation of how they're going to pay for it.
Yeah. That whole thing is just fraught with lies.
It's like a magic trick. You know, they all want you to watch their hands, but that's not really where the trick is happening. Right. Like, look over here.
Well, it's incredible. They also passed a bunch of other spending bills also. I mean, you know, they passed, you know, I think they spent $400 billion on the burn pit bill for veterans, which, you know, I'm fine with doing that. We got to take care of our veterans, but they should have paid for it by cutting something else. They didn't cut anything else. They just spend that. So they have all these other bills that they pass that they don't pay for and executive orders that they don't pay for. And then they want us to, like, credit them as the great inflation reducers for the one bill that maybe they kind of sort of paid for. I mean, it's really absurd.
Yeah, the Inflation Recovery Act, or whatever the heck they call it.
I saw it on Babylon Bee, which I love. I don't know if you guys read that website. Babylon Bee had a headline, you know, it's like a fake news headline, but
right,
it's
right.
So great. They had Democrats plan second Inflation Reduction Act to solve the inflation from the Inflation Reduction Act.
Exactly. Yeah, because they still haven't said when that act will actually start affecting inflation. That's another beautiful line. You know, we'll just have to wait and see.
They're not fooling anyone.
No, they're not. They're not. But I don't know. You think that'll actually go through?
Which one? The student loan thing? Well, it depends. You know, the challenge on that is that it's almost certainly illegal, especially after the West Virginia versus EPA case, where they said on major questions, Congress. It's very clear. They say we want you to do this. An agency can't just find the authority in some old law, which is clearly what they've done here. What they're hoping for and what they're betting on is that no one will have standing to challenge them, essentially. And there's, you know, to get a lawsuit to move in federal court, it's not enough for taxpayers to be heard. That taxpayer standing arguments are pretty much always rejected. Legislators usually don't have standing. So you really need an entity that's directly injured by it to bring the lawsuit. And, you know, they've been pretty clever to try to prevent that from happening. And so they fired all the debt collectors on federal student loans last year.
Because, you
know, debt collectors would be happy to sue. They don't care. Everyone hates them anyway. But there are no more debt collectors on federal student loans, so they're not a potential plaintiff. I think that the plaintiffs that almost definitely could sue are the servicing companies, because the servicing companies make money on all the loans they service. And if you discharge a bunch of them, they're directly harmed, but what they did on that to try to prevent it from happening is they set all the servicing contracts to end at the end of 2023. And so they basically made it clear to these companies that, you know, if you want to be in the next round of servicing contracts, it's going to be the same administration that you're dealing with. And that, I think, is going to make a lot of them hesitant to pop their heads up and by filing a lawsuit on this. What I think is the key is going to be what two states do, Oklahoma and Missouri, because those are the two states that have state agencies that service federal loans, and they're conservative states. And so I think that if those governors have those state agencies bring the lawsuits, there's a pretty good chance that they will survive standing and they will win. And, you know, there's always somebody who has some great creative theory of standing that you didn't necessarily think of. So maybe there's someone out there who has some great theory that I haven't thought of, and I'll be able to get a case that survives standing. But as far as I can tell, the key is going to be if those two states are willing to do it.
Mm-hmm. You know, another group that's remained very quiet about that whole thing are the actual universities. You know, they're sitting on these huge endowments, and
well, they know they can raise their tuition. Remember, part of this Biden plan is to reduce income-based repayment to just 5% of your disposable income on a monthly basis, and then after 20 years, the loans will be discharged in full. Well, for undergraduate programs, the loan amounts are limited, so it doesn't have as big an effect on. But for graduate programs, where you can borrow the entire cost of the program, think about what this means for administrators. They can now double or triple or quadruple it and tell you, don't worry, you're not going to pay it. You're still going to pay 5% of your income.
Exactly.
Wow.
And, you know, taxpayers are going to suck it up. And so this is like, if that part of this stands, this is like the greatest thing that ever happened for university administrators. I mean, they could raise the tuition to literally anything they want, and the students aren't going to pay it. Taxpayers are.
Mm. What a racket.
I mean, honestly.
Yeah, isn't that unbelievable?
Yeah. Yeah, it is unbelievable, actually. And that's the kind of thing that just sends people over the edge, for heaven's sakes.
Well, you look at all the people that took out student loans and paid them. And
well, yeah, those
I mean,
folks.
They're livid. I mean, that's just not right. I mean, it's right that they paid them. Don't get me wrong. I mean, they borrowed the money. They
yeah, but
need
they're
to pay
ultimately getting ripped. I'm not saying we should go back on
right.
that. Right.
But
reparations for people who paid their student loans. That's next.
Yeah.
God.
Well, it's all Monopoly money to them. You know, it reminds me, I don't know if you ever saw the Saturday Night Live thing in the 70s where Dan Aykroyd was Jimmy Carter, and he was like, my new inflation plan is just to print more money, and I'm going to call up the mint. They roll off some of those hundreds. This is Jimmy. And I'll just send the money out to everyone, and yeah, it'll cause more inflation, but who cares?
Yeah.
I mean, this is basically what we're dealing with.
That's exactly what we're doing.
Print more money, we'll pay off these student loans, we'll do this, we'll do that, you know.
I thought you were...
They might say, oh, it's unfair to the people who didn't go to college. Great, we'll print money and send that money, right? I mean, that should be the next thing.
Oh, yeah. See, and that's where we go back to Saturday Night Live, and then, the Coneheads, right? And then pretty soon all the people that work for the government that are doing this stuff, they'll just tell them they come from France.
Something used to be humor. Something used to be a joke. Now it's like real life.
Now you're like, I'm not sure.
It's supposed to be a joke.
But you know what's amazing is when this whole government handout thing took off with COVID, and they were paying all these people to stay home and increasing unemployment and doing all that. They all said this is going to cause inflation if you do this, and they went ahead and did it, and everybody took the money, and everybody was happy, and everybody was buying boats and cars and, you know, scamming the government, and guess what? Here we are. Tons of inflation.
By the way, does anyone believe that the government, when they say food prices are only up 11% in the past year?
Well,
we just went to the grocery store last night, and seriously,
I mean, 11% maybe in the past week. What are you?
We got nothing. What? Yeah, we bought like nothing. I mean, you know, milk and
a smaller package. If you notice it, too, it costs more, and it's a smaller package, and it's like, well, and the government's like, oh, it's up 11%.
It was $80, and we didn't even. I mean, it was like we don't even buy meat because we buy that from a butcher, you know, but. You know, we just got to some regular stuff. It was $80. I thought, are you kidding me?
Yeah, inflation is real, and no, I don't believe the government at all.
Yeah, I don't know how they calculate this stuff. It's really
more imaginary math.
Maybe they're ignoring the packages being smaller. I don't know.
That's another one. I noticed that on a couple of things that, you know, you pick it up and it's like, gosh, this looks smaller than it used to be, and it's a little more money, you know. So they're hitting you both ways on that. So
well, and there isn't, I mean, in the deli that used to have six kinds of turkey, they have three. And so, you know, I can hear people out there who maybe don't love turkey like I do, and then our little dogs do, and they're like, well, get over it. I'm like, but I don't want to get over it.
Yeah, we're given fewer and fewer choices, and I don't know, that's just not who
we are.
Do
you notice it's all arranging? Like, we haven't been in Bed Bath & Beyond in, like, I don't know, 3 years. We walked in there, I don't know, a month ago or something. I forget why. But anyway, we were in there, and it's like, are they just this? It's like the food game that some kids got away with. You know, if their parents weren't very smart, you know, they just spread the food around on their plate, and then it looked like they were eating it all. Everything was just spread around, but they didn't have stuff. And a lot of that, I think, is because who's going to stock inventory for people who aren't shopping?
Yeah, it's. and, I don't know. It's. And then they're trying to tell us how great everything is. It's pretty remarkable situation. Of course, you know, because the media is now invested in.
Yeah, they already told us it was magical.
See with their own eyes, because we've got an election in 2 months.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
2 months
now. So, what's your take on the midterms? Do you think? I mean, at one point, I was thinking, yeah, it's going to be a red wave, but now the media is, you know. All saying the same thing. Oh, you know, they're in trouble. It's probably not going to be a red wave. But
well, don't you think they would say that no matter what?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, but...
So I don't know. So the answer is I don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
No matter what. So yeah. Who knows?
Well, I've always said that any of these issues, you know, people are going to ignore it or you know, just basically not paying attention to it until it hits them in the pocketbook. And it is hitting everybody in the pocketbook right now. And for them to go back and vote the same way again for another spoonful of crap, I can't believe that's going to happen. I don't know. I could be wrong.
You know, the big thing the Democrats have going for them is that gas prices have come down a lot from where they were. And, you know, the way human psychology is, even though they're still a lot more than they were a year ago, they're less than they were a few months ago. And so people feel like, oh, it's not quite as painful as it was. But, you know, the problem they've got, though, is food prices haven't done that at all. They've continued to rise. And so it's kind of like, okay, you're getting a little break at the gas station, although it's still much more than it was last year, except now... You still have to put food on the table. And so I still think that it's a very bad environment for the incumbent party because their entire agenda pushes in the direction of higher prices.
And it has, sure.
You know, since they came into office.
Well,
so, you know, you can't see a real change until you change the party that we've got in power.
Well, and then the gas prices, you know, you look at the strategic reserves and how that factors in, and I'm not sure... That, I mean, I think most people understand the concept, but I'm not sure they understand the risk that that's putting us in. We have to take a really quick break, Phil. We'll be right back. Our guest is Phil Kirpin. You are listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. Nice job, Bill.
Hey, thanks, Aaron.
I ain't rich, but I damn sure want to be. Working like a dog all day ain't working for me. I wish I had a rich uncle that'd kick the bucket and I was sitting on a pile like Warren Buffett. I know everybody says money can't buy happiness, but it can buy me a boat.
Actually, it's give us Democratic talking points. We're going to have to call Don Henley and have him recut the song.
Yeah. Hey, Phil, what about, can you talk a little bit about our energy policy? You know, when Mr. Biden took office, he pretty much gutted it. I mean, we were doing pretty good. And now we're totally in the toilet. Oil reserves are down. Price of natural gas, everything has gone up. How do we get that back? I mean, even if we change the House and Senate, do you think we can get all that back online and kind of reverse the damage?
Well, it's going to be hard, and I'll tell you why. Because not only did Joe Biden do kind of the obvious thing, canceling the Keystone Pipeline, banning oil and gas leasing in federal lands and waters, and all the things that Obama did, bringing back all the EPA regulations and interior rules and regulations and so forth. The other thing that he's done that I think is even more insidious and is going to be more difficult to reverse is he has colluded with activist investors,
yep,
principally among them BlackRock, to essentially weaponize the financial system against oil and gas, to make it so that if you invest in oil and gas, then your ESG score will collapse and your DEI initiatives,
yep,
will fail, and all of the politically motivated aspects of investing will come down on you like a ton of bricks. And so one of the things that has prevented oil and gas in the U.S. from responding to the market signal of higher prices the way it should is not just government policies, but there's a lack of capital. You can't get investors for a lot of oil and gas projects,
right,
even if the economics of it make total sense, because this administration and their allies in the investing world, and they're trying to even formalize this through an SEC rule, you know, they've made it so that
You know, the financial system is very hesitant to invest in fossil fuel projects. And so, you know, if you get, you know, let's say Republicans come in and they're able to somehow hardball with tough language and maybe they threaten a government shutdown, whatever it is, but they get something to demand that leasing open back up and that pipelines get approved and that a lot of these regulations be peeled back. You know, all of that would be great, and I'm all for it, but unless we can sort of attack the problem in the financial system and all the things Treasury and SEC and the White House are doing to sort of prod things in that direction, it's still going to be very difficult to reverse this stuff, and it may take a new presidential administration that has a very clear objective of actually prohibiting those types of considerations and those types of non-economic political considerations.
They'll have to come in with a really heavy hand, too. I mean, this won't be one of those things where we all sit around and play, you know, bipartisan footsie. I mean, I think there's going to have to be...
It's going to be very hard to get back to where we were even a few years ago.
Yeah.
What are they doing? I know Europe is in the throes of this right now. What are they doing over there to try to reverse this?
Well, France is building a ton of nuclear plants. Germany has the problem, though. They've got the Green Party in their government, and so they can't even keep the nuclear plants they have open, and so they're going to have a really catastrophic winter, I think. The United Kingdom is going to, quote-unquote, fiscalize their energy costs, which is the new term for just having taxpayers pick up the bill when energy prices go crazy.
What's it called, fiscalize?
Fiscalize, yeah.
Nice.
Sure, we'll hear it here.
Nice.
No one said that in California yet. They will.
No, yeah, no, we haven't been fiscalized. We're still busy being screwed on whether or not we get gas-powered lawnmowers.
On the bill, yeah. They're going to move it off your electric bill onto your tax bill.
And victory.
This is the strategy in the United Kingdom from their supposedly conservative prime minister.
Terrific.
To fiscalize the energy costs.
God.
But look, Europe has a huge problem. They've not developed their energy resources. They were heavily dependent on Russian gas. We should be able to replace that with U.S. supply because the prices in Europe are so much higher than in the U.S. You would think it would be this huge export opportunity. But, of course, we hamstring ourselves in a variety of ways that prevents that from happening. And so I don't think we're going to be the savior for Europe. And, you know,
no, we're busy.
Instead, we're looking at Europe where all these green energy policies are totally failed. And they're going to there's some landlords in Germany now saying that they're going to forcibly turn off all the heat in their buildings at night. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, this is the kind of stuff that's happening. And instead of saying, oh, my God, we got to go the opposite direction of this, we're passing a bill, you know, like Inflation Reduction Act that follows that path that they're 5 or 10 years ahead of us on that's already failed.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah. So let's not look at history. But hey, speaking of history, we have President Carter is called in because he heard us talking about him, and I think we have a little short snippet of his speech.
Inflation is our friend. For example, consider this: in the year 2000, if current trends continue, the average blue-collar annual wage in this country will be $568,000. Think what this inflated world of the future will mean. Most Americans will be millionaires. Everyone will feel like a big shot. Wouldn't you like to own a $4,000 suit and smoke a $75 cigar, drive a $600,000 car? I know I would. What about people on fixed incomes? They have always been the true victims of inflation. That's why I will present to Congress the Inflation Maintenance Program, whereby the U.S. Treasury will make up any inflation-caused losses through direct tax rebates to the public in cash. Now, you may say, won't that cost a lot of money? Won't that increase the deficit? Sure it will. But so what? We'll just print more money. We have the papers, we have the mints. I can just call up the Bureau of Engraving and say, hi, this is Jimma. Roll off some of them 20s. Print up a couple of thousand sheets of those century notes. Sure, the glut of dollars will cause even more inflation, but who cares? Everybody will be a millionaire.
The best way to burn...
Yeah, isn't that...
Yeah.
That hits pretty close to home right
It's like,
there.
Oh, wow, how did somebody in the 70s...
The difference is it was comedy then.
Yeah.
Now it's real life.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
we used to joke about it, and now it's policy. Now we hear it on the... It's not Dan Aykroyd doing the news. It's Don Lemon.
Did your governor literally do that? Send out money to fight inflation, supposedly?
Well, of course. Come on, Phil.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, he got the idea from Saturday Night Live.
Maybe so.
He got it from Saturday Night Live. Dan Aykroyd taught him everything he knows.
I heard the other day that the euro, for the first time in God, I don't know how many decades, is actually gone below the dollar, which is crazy when you think about it, because it was always up, and now it's below the dollar, and it's a sign of the times. I mean, that's it's happening everywhere.
It's really crazy. You know, you might think things are so crazy here that the dollar would be going down, but the dollar's been going up because all the other places are doing the same thing. It's remarkable.
Yeah, yeah. So
and they're busy telling us it's great and it's going to be helpful. That's the part that's just
well. Also, I think they were very heavily invested in wind and solar over there, and realized that that didn't really pan out too well.
It's not super reliable.
Well, there's this thing where sometimes happens is the wind doesn't always blow and the sun doesn't always.
I know, isn't that crazy?
There's a thing called nighttime.
What?
Yeah, it's weird. The solar doesn't work.
Darkness. Yeah. I'm sure we'll. I'm sure that's a new. That's like the new carbon, right?
Yeah, that's what they hadn't counted on that.
Yeah, we're going to start a new program to combat darkness.
Yeah. Well, you look at you take California, and you know the leader in this technology. they're saying by 2035. There'll be no more gas-powered vehicles sold in California. And I think Oregon and Washington
A whole bunch of them jumped in on it. But instead of mocking them,
they plan to have enough power plants to supply the grid with all the cars.
Yeah, exactly.
But the crazy part, Phil...
Did they explain that part of it?
But instead of mocking them, the manufacturers are doing it. Like, they're planning for it.
Oh,
like,
yeah,
it's
like
real.
What Ford just did, you know, they had their big dealer meeting here just last week, and they're setting everybody up to be electric dealers now, and they're leaning on their dealerships to invest millions to sell and maintain and charge these electric vehicles. So, I mean, it's we just don't have the infrastructure to support that. And when are they going to wake up and realize that? Because we're already in trouble with electricity in California.
Yeah, although that hasn't prevented our esteemed energy secretary from going out there to talk about, you know, what great leaders you are and how the rest of the country needs to follow your lead and all this kind of stuff.
Well, and don't forget, we have
brownouts and blackouts, though. She's been out there.
Yeah. I heard, isn't Granholm leaving? Isn't there somebody else coming in?
Oh, I don't know. I'm sure the next one won't be.
No, I was just going to ask you if you had.
I hadn't seen that.
Who the new one was?
Our transportation secretary is on top of it though, so we'll be okay.
Pete's going to take care of all of it.
They did avoid a rail strike. It's interesting, you know, the rail union was supposedly going to go on strike on Friday, and the Republicans took a bill to the Senate floor on Thursday that would have imposed the terms of the last above the Biden commission, basically the 24% raise, all those kinds of things. And the Democrats objected. They blocked it. And then like 10 hours later, they're like, oh, we have a breakthrough. It's the exact same deal terms as the bill we all voted against.
but they came to the rescue.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
That's
good job,
crazy.
I guess.
Yeah, we're on the edge. Had that rail strike happened,
I don't even want to think about it.
Oh my gosh! I mean, diesel would have pretty much stopped.
Which, by the way, makes me a little surprised. You know, I actually think that the unions abandoned their members because they had so much leverage to get such a better deal.
Yeah.
And they basically, what I think happened is the Democrats basically told them, like, you can't do this before an election. We're going to get wiped out. And they said, okay, and they took what was on the table. Because they took the same deal that had been on the table all along.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Despite all the leverage they had. I was kind of surprised by that.
Yeah, that would have been a disaster. I think that would have been a bridge too far, for sure.
Well, if that had happened, you know, Republicans would have been winning Senate races in, like, Washington State and Illinois and Connecticut. I mean, it would have been... That would have been Katie barred the door, which, you know, because they know that, because the unions are so, you know, politically aware and
right.
in the pocket of the Democrats. I think this is one of those things where, you know, there are a lot of things where the Democrats do things for the union bosses. This was one where the union bosses did something for the Democrats, in my opinion.
Yeah, there'll be some payback down the road somewhere.
I'm sure.
Yeah, yeah. So,
so what else do you see out there? Especially things people haven't been told. Or
no, I think
been,
that about
been told correctly
that,
about that.
I think that about covers most of it. I do still think that, you know, when we get into January and February, in places where the Democrats have unrivaled power, they're going to do another round of masks and school closures and other dumb COVID stuff because they can't help. They can't. They're incapable of admitting it was a mistake the last three or four times they did it, and so they're just going to keep doing it. I'm just hoping that it will be a much smaller number of places, and will they really be able to mock and ridicule them. But that's something that, particularly if people are in kind of liberal cities or liberal areas, you got to think about how to potentially use your vote to wall some of that off, and, you know, get more sensible people into positions of power to maybe prevent that or limit its scope. But that's the other thing, unfortunately, to look forward to. As a new annual tradition of places where liberals are in charge,
and they love doing that. But they've already done the mail out ballots and all that stuff. So there's. That stuff
is. I think that it's become more of a political loser for them, and so they can't do it before the election.
Right, right.
They'll have to do it again after.
They'll have to wait. And, you know, for all those people out there that are thinking, well, it doesn't matter, you know, the world's burning, you better vote in November. You know, go in, vote in person, do whatever you have to do in your area to, you know, be a poll watcher, do what you need, but. We can't have all of the conservative folks in this country sitting on the sidelines hoping that it magically solves itself.
Look, that's for sure. I mean, the thing is that, you know, the problem we have as conservatives is that, like, half the Republicans are useless. And so, you know, people vote, they vote them in, they come, and then they don't do a lot, and people get dispirited again. But, you know, that said, you can't let the Democrats have the reins of power. It's better to slow things down than to have them real fast.
Well, that's right. The thing. I mean, people get all caught up in the perfection. You know, who's not perfect? And I'm like, no. Like, yeah, that's real nice when you've got everything organized. Then let's have a perfection test. But for the time being, we just have to stop the madness.
Yep.
Do you see when we get into the throes of winter? Do you see anything coming as far as fuel oil prices for heating or heating oil prices?
Jack that up.
You see any problems in these big cities with cost?
Well, we've got a huge problem in the Northeast with natural gas prices because there are no pipelines, and so they're
right.
Going to get supplied by boat, and so they already have prices much higher than the rest of the country, and if they could go up to European-type prices and have a real acute crisis, which, you know, because it's the Northeast,
It'll
become the dominant national story, of course.
They'll
cry bitterly.
Well, I think that,
maybe we could send them some illegal aliens and they'd be happier. Oh, we already tried that.
Well, right.
We already tried that. They got exported.
Right. The last few days of that, I mean, we could do another whole hour just on that. I mean, pretty incredible.
That was priceless, actually.
The they're saying, you know, we don't have infrastructure to deal with 50 illegals.
But everybody else does.
Everybody else does.
Oh, my God. Phil, we've hit the wall here. We're going to get.
They don't realize that they're, like, exactly proving the point.
Exactly.
Yeah, no kidding.
They just play along. They don't know any better. So, I don't know.
All right. Well, we're going to get hammered by the news here, so we have to let you go. But we really appreciate you coming on with us, and I'm glad our schedule's finally connected. So, Phil Kirpin, you're an awesome guest, full of info, and we really, really thank you for spending your Sunday afternoon with us.
All right. Have a good one.
Can find us at wethepeopleradio.us, and the archive will be on later this afternoon.
I love my classes. I got a crazy teacher. He wears dark glasses. Things are going.